Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Ruminations of Red Rum. I'm your host, Kyle, with a K. Today, we have a very special episode. I have joining me author of Evening of the Mutated Undead, Eddie Reyes. Eddie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very good. And yourself?
Not too bad. Not too bad, man. I'm really excited to have you on. I actually just finished the book not too long ago. Not to get into too much spoilers, but I absolutely loved it. It was awesome.
Thank you.
I'm a big zombie fan. Eddie, first and foremost, I want our audience to learn a little bit more about you. So I know that you're an author of many books. You have a bunch of books. The Love Song of Nathan Crane, Jack Forward Soul Collector. You have a bunch of stuff on record. But tell us a little bit about who you are and more about your brand, the E. Reyes Horror.
Well, like my whole brand is... I started off liking like Goosebumps and all that, but like what really got me into horror was horror movies. Like, just like with the first Halloween, like as soon as I watched that, I knew that I wanted to be involved in horror, like in Halloween, like the season and all that. So I think my whole brand is basically like Halloween every day. And if I'm not writing about Halloween, then I just, like, I take a lot of inspiration from all the movies I watched. So, like, zombies and slashers. And I put my own spin on a lot of the things that that I've been, like, watching over the years. And so I think, like, my whole brand is just that. Like, every day is Halloween and keeping it spooky all the time.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. I like your E. Reyes Horror like little icon. I love the E and the little pumpkin next to it. I think it's really it's really clever and really cool. I like the brand a lot. And you kind of got into like what got you into writing, but yeah. I'm actually kind of curious because I actually bought The Love Song of Nathan Crane as well. I haven't read that yet. I started with Evening of the Mutated Undead just because I'm a huge zombie guy. Yeah. As my audience knows, I'm like the zombie guru of the cast. But what are your three favorite zombie films out of curiosity? We'll start with a little bit of an icebreaker.
All right, the first one, my favorite of all time, is Tom Savini's Night of the Living Dead, the 1990.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, that one was like...
So you like Savini's Night of the Living Dead more than Romero's?
I love that one, but when I watched that one, I think that was the one that like actually scared me like a lot, like to the point where I thought zombies were going to be at my window at night.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think I just like had like a fascination with it. Like I was scared to death of it, but I also like really liked it, and I was like beyond creeped out, like the way the zombies look, because they actually look like dead people. So that's what was like really creepy.
Yeah, I think it helped that Savini was such like a talented makeup artist.
Yeah, so
just being able to direct the film the way he wanted to, but being able to have like full creative control of like the way the zombies looked, I think was like super effective. Mm-hmm. I remember actually watching that one before I even saw any of the Romero ones too. Like I rented it from Blockbuster back in the day, and it was genuinely terrifying.
Yeah. And I think what he did too was like he studied like I don't know what like if it was like morgue books or something like to see wounds and all that, but I'm pretty sure it was Savini. I don't know if you heard about that. Like he was looking at like pictures of like wounds and like dead, or I don't know if that was him or if that was Greg Nicotero. I know it was one of them.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, when you make a living out of like trying to make something look as realistic as possible, the way like flesh tears and stuff, it, like as morbid as it is, I would imagine you'd probably want to get it as accurate as possible so it looks you know cool.
But, so that's to go down that.
Okay. That's a strong one.
And my other one is Dawn of the Dead 2004.
So you got two Romero remakes as your top zombie films. Okay. All right. Tell me about your first experience with the Zack Snyder Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, when I watched that one, I remember like the first parallel. I was like, what? Like, it just seems so different. Because I remember I watched Resident Evil in theaters, the 2002.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The first one. And that one, like, it creeped me out. Because I still never got over my fear of, like, zombies since the Tom Savini one. Mm-hmm. So when I was in theaters, I was, like, watching that one and, like, looking behind me. Like, making sure nothing's behind me or anything. But yeah, when I watched this one, it heightened that fear because they were running and all that. Like, I know a lot of people hate, like, the running zombies. But that just made it creepier because it's like, what are you going to do with a bunch, like, a horde of them running at you? So
yeah, we covered that on the podcast, and I think that was like a turning point in zombie culture where we were like, okay, well, you're fucked. There's no way you're gonna survive anymore.
There's no way.
Like, I can barely run a mile, let alone run for my entire life from these
zombies. And the zombies don't stop running until they like fall or something, so it's over.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Yeah, but when I watched that, and I watched that little girl come through the bedroom when she's in the bedroom door, that's when I was like, holy, like, it just looked different, and like the whole movie, so yeah, like, dude, I liked all the effects and all that.
Yeah, that and 28 Days Later with the fast infected.
Yeah, 28 like, Days Later too.
That was a game changer for sure in zombie pop culture. Like, that was a huge turning point for sure. So what's your number three?
Three, that's one I was like thinking about, because like 28 Days Later, that one, I really like.
I mean, that's a perfect movie. If you like, in my opinion, I think that's probably a perfect movie. But yeah, I know people would disagree.
Yeah, because like, as soon as I watched it, I was like, man, this is incredible. Like, it was like creepy too, like, with the whole like when the guy gets the blood in his leg and turns into one of them, and it's just the whole thing was creepy to me, and it was so different. But the other one that comes to mind is Planet Terror.
Planet Terror. Is that the Robert Rodriguez?
Yeah, that one.
I've never seen it, actually.
Yeah, I watched it with that one, because that one like inspired me. It inspired me to write the Halloween Grindhouse and Evening of the Mutated Undead.
Okay, well, on that note then, because I am kind of curious, like, what is your creative process look like for you as far as like coming up with an idea, and like when you start, like what gets you going? Like, how does that process start?
Like, a lot of the times I'll be hearing music, like soundtrack. Like, I remember once I heard the Sinister, like the music playing in the little like kill films, the 8mm ones. Mm-hmm. I was like, I wonder, like, what is this? Cause it was so like creepy and unsettling. So I went and listened to it. And then I'll just have like images in my head or like a storyline going with it. And it'll just come out like that. Or a lot of times I'll just be at, like, when I would work at, it was Dollar General as a cashier, like, I saw a parked van. Then I imagined, like, a girl getting kidnapped by someone in the van, or on Halloween walking down the street, and I could picture, like, a dead guy, like a zombie, basically, with a pumpkin head on, walking down the street, and just wondering, what would people think about that or react to it? So it's just, like, little things that just come into my mind, or a lot of times it's from movies, like just the inspiration from it. Like, you know what? I want to write something like this, and then I'll do my own.
Now, when you get those ideas, like, do you immediately put them to paper, or do you kind of sit on them for a while and try to think of like the best way to transition it from your thoughts to like the written word? Or do you like do you have like a notebook where you kind of write down your ideas and then like form them later, or is it something that you just kind of like sit on for a while?
Yeah, I sit on them for a while, because when I do that, that's when I know like they're meant to be written, because a lot of times ideas will just like come and go. Mm-hmm. But there's always some that stay with me, and I know Stephen King said this too. He says like that he doesn't like to like outline or write it down, because like, mm-hmm, if it's meant to be or whatever, or like it wants to be told, like you'll just like have it in there. Or Like with me, and like it just builds up. Like, I'll picture it in my head, and then it keeps going and going and going, and then like I end up just when I end up writing it, then it like just comes together.
That's cool. I like that. Let's get into, I mean, let's just jump in to Night of the Mutated Undead. I think at first I'll I'll kind of keep it non-spoilery so the listeners can kind of get like a vibe of what's going on and see if it sounds up their alley, which I think, if I'm being honest, it's going to be like most of our listeners, this book is going to be up their alley. So I don't want to spoil things, you know, right off the bat. But
yeah,
like I said, I'm a big zombie guy. So this book was appealing to me personally. In the afterwards of it, you said this came to you in a dream. So I kind of want to start there. Like, can you elaborate on the dream and
the dream
how
was
that like transformed into what would become the book?
Yeah, the dream was like, it was like the skeleton, I guess, of the book, but mm-hmm. it was much more like if I was on a had a fever or something. But the way it happened in my dream was like a guy was walking down the street like with a jug of PCP.
Why PCP? How do you even know what a jug of PCP looks like? I'm curious.
Well, like I like music I've heard like or movies, so I just picked like in my dream it was just a like a water jug with like clear liquid, mm-hmm. and he was just like walking down the street with it, and then going to meet some other like drug dealers, or I don't know if they were buying it. And then it was Halloween. It wasn't Halloween in the story though, mm-hmm. but it was Halloween. They were just talking, and I guess I was there being the camera because I wasn't like I was just watching this happen.
Yeah.
And then it was like on the hill. The whole neighborhood was on the hill. And then I looked to the city, and I remember there was like kids just like dressed in like cloaks and skeleton masks, whatever. And then I just see like a bomb, like not a, why was it? I didn't know it was a bomb yet, but it was like just like smoke coming down. And then it hit the city. And then it was just a green, like massive cloud. And then it just spread everywhere. And then that's when like I started seeing like eyeballs and stuff on like the trick or treaters and all that. But that was it. Like that's all that happened in the dream. And I like transformed it.
The night the bombs dropped is also just, I love Evening of the Mutated Undead, but I'll also say that the night the bombs dropped, knowing what happens in the book, that is a really cool title as well. I just want to say.
Yeah, because I was thinking about that and I was like, green gas, and like I don't want people to think it's like a fart book or something. Yeah.
No, the night the bombs dropped reminded me like of a zombie movie that would have been made in like the 50s or the 60s. Yeah. Like it gives me that vibe for sure.
Yeah.
But
I could see the whole image in my head or like black and white.
Exactly. I was a fan of it. I think that, so just diving into like Jeff and stuff like that. I think the way you write your characters, more specifically Jeff, make them very grounded and relatable from like the vocabulary they use and also like the internal monologues that they have.
Yeah.
Is there any part of you and your sensibilities in Jeff, or do you try not to project yourself into the characters that you write?
Yeah, I try not to. Like, I try to, like, I'm always like, I'm not like a creepy person standing there looking at everybody, but like I just observe like my surroundings. And like if I was like a kid, I'll be with my dad. He'll be talking to his friends. I'll be here. I'll just be like paying, like just listening, and or my friends talking or people on movies. So I just get it from that. And then like I could put like some like tiny bits of me in there, but it's mostly like what I hear and what I see and all that.
Yeah, I think it's very, very it's very relevant and of the time. Like you could tell it was written now.
Yeah.
Like especially with the Omar character and the way he talks. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really kind of cool. And I appreciated that. But going into kind of the setting, the book to me felt very small in scope and claustrophobic. Oh,
yeah.
Kind of due to it being set in like just really a couple different locations. Mm-hmm. But it felt very like Romero in that way, like in a good way, almost like a love letter to like old zombie properties, like how it's just one self-contained little area.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and like a neighborhood, and yeah.
Like, so was it always your intent to keep the setting more concentrated, or did you ever have plans on expanding the setting to like multiple locations?
I was thinking about like expanding it at first. Like I wanted it to be a novel, but I didn't want to like water it down too much. Like I was thinking about, like, I didn't want it to drag on, or like I know a lot of people have said like they wanted me to expand more like from the ending, but like to me,
we'll
like,
get into that. We'll get into the ending later. I have questions. Right. But.
Okay, yeah. So like, but I wanted, and I wanted it to feel like how you're saying claustrophobic, like you have the storm on top of him. He's in a tiny neighborhood, and it's just a point A to point B. Mm-hmm. And I wanted it to feel like, yeah, like it was just closing in, and like no way out. So I wanted that like element to be in there. But I was thinking about like expanding it, but I like as of right now, I don't even know, I don't even know yet like if there will. But that sounds like a good idea.
As for me personally, I was a huge fan of it because in like a lot of the zombie stuff that I'm into, I think that zombie stories are the best when it's very focused. And I think you did a very, very good job at kind of like you said, giving the characters like a direct path from point A to point B, but also making it like very impactful to character development and the arcs. And with such a small novella, you gave a lot of context to the side characters without dragging it on. So I think kind of like what you said, you didn't want to drag it on or water it down. I think you were 100% like, I think you nailed it. So I really enjoyed that part of it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let's get into zombies, man. It's a zombie book, right? So how did you come up with these fucking designs, like, of the infection and the zombies? Like, why all the eyes? Like, how did this start?
Well, with the eyes, I was just, like, imagining, like, well, it came partly from the dream, but, like, I wanted, like, the eyeball things, it's always, like, creep me out. Like, eyeballs on Resident Evil, like, if you, like, when you get to the main boss, there's always, like, one giant eyeball, like, on his forearm or something.
Yeah, no, I did make that connection in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's definitely that, because that scared me, too, as a kid, like, on the PlayStation. Mm-hmm. Like, when I'd watch that little intro on Resident Evil.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, that, but I wanted, but, like, thinking about it grossed me out, so I wanted to, like, I guess gross myself out. And just make it like more something like a bomb. I don't even, if you want me to spoil it or not, like,
well, okay. So let's get into the spoilers then. So we'll transition. Okay. So we'll stay on the conversation of the zombies and stuff too. So, I'm always kind of fascinated when storytellers like yourself find new ways to introduce how the zombie outbreak starts and like how the infection spreads. So, like, how did you settle on aliens, and are the gas bombs the only way it's transmitted? That second part of the question is just more for me personally. I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, I don't think I ever, I don't think anyone got bit and turned into it on the book. But
they didn't.
Yeah, the big part was the gas. That was like, but yeah, I didn't see it. Like, I think, oh, you know what? I think that did happen. Well, a lot of them ran away, I know, like, when they got bit. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, if I was to make another one, then I would incorporate that because they get the disease from that. But yeah, it's initial, like, how it really happened was just like the gas.
Okay. And like, how did you settle on aliens?
The alien thing, I was thinking to myself, because like in Resident Evil, it's like the T virus, and then Night of the Living Dead, wasn't it like from a meteor?
Night of the Living Dead?
Yeah, wasn't it like when they were on the radio? And they were saying, like,
oh, man,
I swear.
dude, my zombie cred is about to get thrown out the window. I actually don't know if it was like a meteor.
Yeah, I think it said something like on the radio.
On the news,
yeah,
on the broadcast. Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right.
So then I was thinking, like, and then I wanted to pay homage, especially like to George, because he started all this. So I was thinking, because his was from space too, and then UFOs. And then at the time, all I was seeing was UFO videos, like on social media. Mm-hmm. So I was like picturing that. And then, like, what if someone was actually recording this? And then what happens in the book happens? Like, so I just was thinking about like different scenarios and all that.
Yeah, no, I thought it was cool. It's definitely, I have only come across this kind of story not in pertaining to like how they are, you know, how the outbreak starts and stuff like that, but I've only ever seen a cross between aliens and zombies in one other piece of fiction, which is a movie, like an Australian zombie movie, which you guys should check out. It's called Undead, but it's only similar in the sense that there's zombies and aliens in it, but I was actually like it's refreshing because you don't really come across this very often, so I thought it was a cool take on a zombie.
Yeah, and like when I first put it, I was wondering like if people would like take to it and or if they'll be like, man, it's corny, like a UFO, whatever. But I was glad a lot of people like enjoyed that part too. Because I honestly didn't know like how people would take it.
Well, yeah, I actually have a question about kind of like your audience and your readers. Just because I was a little curious. And again, if you want to turn off the episode now, read the book and come back, please go buy his book. It's on Amazon. But we're gonna get into spoiler territory. So if you don't care, then keep listening. But I know that like most IP won't introduce kids being killed.
Oh, and yeah.
Especially the idea of like zombie babies.
Yeah.
And let me just lay out my opinion really quick, because I've gone on the record on this cast before saying that like I don't like when they don't fully commit and show that kind of stuff and that violence, because it's not realistic. Like there would be zombie kids, there would be zombie babies, and I think when stories shy away from it, I mean, it's their story to be told. So if they don't want to depict that, that's totally on them. But I like when stories do take that direction, because it is very morbid. It's depressing, and it's what would happen. So to my question now, were you ever worried that putting a zombie baby in the book might turn off more like sensitive readers from finishing your book?
Yeah, I was a thing I was thinking about, but then, like, if I would have censored myself, like, I would have, like, it wouldn't have felt, like, I would have put the book out and just always thought about that. Like, it would have been, like, I should have done that, or, so I guess, like, I was just being true to my writing, just let the story write itself, so that's why I kept it in there, and yeah, like, writing that wasn't, like, it was creepy and, like, sad. So I was wondering, yeah, like how people would, what is it, like take to it. But yeah. I honestly haven't heard nothing about it. I don't know if they like. So I really don't know how it was taken. But yeah, that part was like, for me too, it was like, oh crap.
Yeah, no, I think it's like tragic, dude. Like,
yeah.
Just a baby, like when they first didn't know, and then like, like the reveal.
Yeah.
Like how they risk their lives. I mean, I think any decent human being would risk their life for a baby, right? Especially in that scenario. So the fact that it turned out to be, you know, worst case scenario was tragic, man. But I'm sorry to say this, but I did kind of chuckle when the truck flew off the bridge and the baby flew off.
Yeah.
The dark humor inside of me kind of made me laugh a little bit. But that's my own personal just dark humor. But
and then on that part too, I was thinking like, what would I do in that situation, you know, like if you find it and like they don't even know, so they just like wrap it, put it in the truck bed.
That's a good point too, like I didn't think about that. Like what would you, like I would probably like, would you just leave it, like
that's what I was like, I don't even know.
Yeah, that's great. The bridge scene, by the way, was epic. It was epic, and it's actually kind of funny because when you described Mateo as dropping from the spacecraft and landing, shattering and cracking the ground beneath him, I literally said, like in my head, I was like, "Oh, it's boss paddle time!" The next sentence, Omar said he's given final boss vibes, and I was like, "Dude, taken straight out of my head." I was like, "This is awesome! This is awesome!" So just my opinion on this, I personally loved this part of the book because before this, we never really had like a main antagonist, like a face to put to like a main antagonist. Like we had the aliens, but they haven't really like seen them yet. So like there was like an overarching, you know, villain, but there was never like a face.
No.
And this was like the first time they actually, kind of like what you said, it was like a boss. It was like putting a face to the, like the evil. So I really enjoyed this. Were you inspired by anything to put a, like a Last Stand fight like this in the finale?
Like the only part I was just thinking, like I wanted to have something like at the end, and I didn't want, like, I didn't want there to be the aliens coming down. Like I just wanted them to be like, kind of like doing an experiment, like on Devil's Hill, the whole city, like just dropping the gas, see what happens. So then when they get this guy and they put him up there and experiment on him, I wanted him to be like, again, like how you were saying, like the face of it. So he was like their boss, their like their huge weapon. But like I always thought about like the final boss, like in Resident Evil especially, like there's always like bosses or in games, and I was thinking like there has to be something that's like jacked up and like just scary. So that was when I started thinking about that, and then I put his little story about him working out, and then all of a sudden this UFO shows up.
Yeah, that chapter was really interesting to me because I thought it was going in a different direction personally, and then like the whole introduction to Mateo was really cool, and I thought he would have a different presence. I thought that maybe he would be more of like a knight in shining armor to towards help. The end where he would like join and help them or whatever, but it turns out that he was the villain. So I thought that was a really cool twist, and I mean, I guess it wasn't a twist, but I like how it was how it developed, and I thought it was really, really cool. But what do you have against metalheads, man?
What did I say?
You gotta make the bad guy the metalhead, huh? That's crazy.
Wasn't he hearing sure?
That's true. He was. I thought that was awesome. So we haven't talked much about Omar, but I kind of want to leave a lot of Omar to the readers to kind of learn about him. But I will say, again, spoiler territory, killing Omar so close to the finish line.
I know, like right there.
it was giving me like Frank Darabont's the Mist vibes, like the ending of The Mist.
Yep, and when the house comes were, like, right there.
Yeah, was that like inspired at all by that, or was that just a coincidence? Because like,
yeah, it was just it just happened. Like the way I was, like the way I was just writing it down, I just saw that happening, and then the help being right there.
Yeah, it gave me the same feeling. Like when
when
it happened, I was like, "Oh my god, dude, he was right there!"
Yeah.
Like so close, made it so much more tragic.
And that ending is still the most tragic to me of them on The Mist. Yeah, it's like every time I see it or think about it, I'm like, man, that sucks.
Yeah. So was it always your plan to have him killed off? And also, this is kind of a two-part question. Was there ever a version where Jeff died?
No, I didn't have no version of him dying. But with Omar, I was conflicted with it. I was like, am I going to keep him? Because I wanted to keep him alive. Mm-hmm. But as the story played out, I just saw him getting murdered, getting killed. So I was like, I just let it roll with that.
Okay.
Because like, and then, I know how they say like a lot of people don't like to kill him, but a lot of people do. Like they kill off like the likable or the comedy relief or whatever.
Yeah. But
yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, I don't know. But in my head, as I saw like it playing out, I just saw that happening to him.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was super effective. It was tragic. It was crazy. I mean, I personally am really into like super sad and depressed shit. So like whenever there's like a really kind of like Frank Darabont's The Mist, like when there's a really effective sad ending, I don't know why I like relate to it more. but this was no exception. I thought it was brutal, but I wanted him to live. I was rooting for Omar.
But, didn't write it.
it wasn't in the cards for him. So the ending, I personally do want a sequel. Do you have any plans? Was it ever in your plans to make a sequel to this, or is it just kind of a one-off?
I'm still thinking about it because I don't want like the aliens to take over, like, or the eyeball zombies. So I was thinking, like, I do want to come back to it, but at the same time, I have like three other like stories that are like, write me. So like, they're always in my head. So I don't really have, like, I haven't had no time to think about it or anything, but I want there to be.
Heck yeah, dude. Well, I mean, if you do write another one, I'm going to be first in line to pick it up and check it out. So
thank you.
I do have kind of like a fun little question, just because I'm curious on what you'd say. But if you have one director, living or dead, that would direct a film adaptation to this, who would it be?
Probably Robert Rodriguez.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, because after watching Planet Terror, like, I would want it with that same, like, you, if you watched it, like, it looks like an old movie, like, played on an 8mm out of drive-in.
Yeah, dude, I'm a big fan of anything he does, and also what he does with Quentin Tarantino. I love his style.
Yeah.
I even love his older movies, like The Faculty and stuff. Huge fan of The Faculty.
Oh, yeah, The Faculty, yeah.
It's a great movie, but well, cool, man. Eddie, I appreciate you being on the show with us. Would you be willing to come back to maybe talk about a movie or something?
Yeah. Yep.
Hell yeah. That'd be awesome.
I'm always down to talk about horror movies.
Awesome, Eddie. Well, Eddie, where can our audience find you? What socials are you on? Where are you at?
Well, as of this recording, we don't know what's going on with TikTok. I was on there.
That's true.
But on Instagram, so Erais Author on Instagram, and I think that's about it. Like, I just have TikTok, Instagram. Sometimes YouTube, I just like post my old stuff on there, but mainly is Instagram.
Okay. And where can we find your work? Where can they all go out and buy your stuff?
Some of it is on Barnes and Noble, but the majority, like all of it, is on Amazon. Like, I even have audiobooks up now. The only one that isn't on there is The Love Song of Nathan Crane, but it will be soon. But yeah, everything's on Amazon.
Who reads your audiobook stuff?
It was a narrator with Velox Books, but the ones that I recently put out, like self-published, it's just like a computer voice.
Oh, okay.
But it's like, it's not like a cheap, like a
head it's like,
back thing.
And Omar found the zombie under the bed.
Yeah, it's not like that.
Gotcha, yeah,
gotcha. Like, it was Amazon that put it out, so they let us like preview it before it like goes live. So yeah, I did that. But yeah, the other ones are narrated by someone else.
Okay. And is there anything that we could look forward to next from you?
The next one is going to be based off Richard Ramirez, but not him. It's like, I was inspired like reading the true crime book. Okay. It's going to be called The Murders at Camp Ketchum, and it's set in 1996 in Devil's Hill, Arizona.
Nice, dude. Okay. I can get behind that. Any inspiring words? Sorry to throw you on the spot. Any inspiring words for up and coming authors that want to get out there and publish some stuff?
I would say to, like, if you're starting right now, like if you're writing right now, haven't put out nothing, after you're done with it, do what Stephen King said. It's what I didn't do and I regret it. Like, wait 6 months and then come back to it, like with a fresh pair of eyes, and get it edited right. Cause like, I didn't get it, mine's edited good the first time around. So I'd recommend them getting it edited, proofread, and taking their time with it. Cause when I found out I could self-publish, I just like dropped mine out there and then had to like redo everything again. So avoid that. Don't do my mistakes. Just do, take your time with it, and then everything will roll out good. And keep it spooky if you're writing spooky stuff.
Hell yeah, Eddie. Well, this has been another episode of Ruminations of Red Rum, the flying tarantula of the Ruminations Radio Network. If you like what we're doing here, please follow us on Twitter. That's of Red Rum, OF Red Rum. You can join our Discord via the link in our Twitter bio or X bio now. Come join us, hang out, talk horror movies, talk horror books. Keep it spooky, as Eddie would say. I've been your host, Kyle, with a K. Joining me, Eddie Reyes of E. Reyes Horror. Any final words for our ROR listeners, Eddie?
Thank you all for listening, and thank you for having me, and keep it spooky.
You heard him. Keep it spooky, folks.